your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Listening to another episode of Lords of Limited with your hosts Ben Wernie and Ethan Sachs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Wernie, and joining me on the line is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, I haven't talked to you in a while. What have you been up to?
I have been up to playing a lot of Magic. I started back up at the bartending job that I had last year, so I'm back to that grind. Had a few training sessions this week. And all this podcast prep helped me book my first voiceover gig this week.
Ooh,
so that was pretty sweet.
Nice.
Yeah. Got my sweet, you know, blue snowball here. If you guys are listening and you want to sponsor this podcast, we're welcoming any and all submissions for sponsorship. We do use your products, and they are very good, as you can hear.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, so that was fun. How about you? How was your week? You've been on a whirlwind tour this weekend, yeah?
Yeah, I took the old Paoli minibus across the state of Indiana, four hours up to Purdue, 4 hours back today, chaperoned some All-State band. So yeah, it was good. Kids had a concert today and they played really well. It was a lot of fun.
Did you have any sort of like conducting duties or like
no,
teacher duties, or were you just purely an adult?
Bed checks. I was like, are you here? Great. Are you not having sex? Great. Good night.
Great. I love it. Well, we have quite the episode here today. There's a new set coming out this week, baby.
Ooh.
Yeah, Masters 25. Though, is it A25? What is all this A25 I'm seeing?
Anniversary
around?
25, I think.
Is that the preferred nomenclature?
I'm going to be calling it M25.
Great. Masters 25 it is. You heard it here first on Lords of Limited. It's coming out this week, and we want to get y'all prepped and ready. If you're going to be grinding it on Magic Online in the Phantom Queues would be our recommendation, I believe. Or if you're going to your FNM and trying to kick some butt there, we're going to give you as many tools as we can to prepare you for the set releasing and to have a leg up against the competition.
Yeah. Before we do that, we got Patreon stuff to get to, yeah?
We got Patreon stuff to get to. That is correct. So we do have a Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, where you as a listener can give back to the show if you so choose. We have a lot of sweet perks that we try to give to incentivize you to do so. The base level there is you get access to our Discord chat, and that is where it's happening, people. This is where the degenerate of the degenerates come to talk about their draft logs, their keeper mulls, their what's the play decisions, to brag about their trophy hypes, to ask us questions. You get access to not only me and Ben to give you feedback about all things Limited, but a whole community of listeners just like you. And that's just for the base level. Get access to our show notes. And believe me, for episodes like this Crash Course, you're going to want access to the show notes. And you even get a little behind the scenes access to the show. We do a little recording to prep for the podcast. You get access to that for a higher tier of donation. So we just want to take a moment to thank everyone who has supported the show from the beginning to last week. It's really been incredible to have so many people come and support the show, not only listening, but participating in all the forums that we have for you. It's really been an incredible journey, and we're excited to keep moving forward.
Yes, absolutely. The Discord is my favorite part of the podcast. Love coming home and going through everyone's drafts.
Okay, so last time a new set dropped, last time when Rivals of Ixalan came out, we decided to do things a little differently. There's a lot of card-by-card set reviews out there for you, and we wanted to take a different route, and we got a lot of positive feedback, so we're going to continue down that path for this Masters 25 Crash Course for you, and we're going to try and bring you as many stats as possible about the set. So Ben, maybe you can run through what this episode is going to look like for the listeners.
Yeah, first thing we're going to do is start off with stats, just jamming as many of those as we can, looking at the power and toughness of creatures in the set, the average converted mana cost for creatures, what the removal's like, instant speed, sorcery speed, what's the cost of the removal, how does the removal match up against the creatures, what sort of life gain there is in the format. That's kind of been a clue to us in the past couple formats about the format slowing down, maybe. Mm-hmm. What sort of sweepers are available, common, uncommon, mana sinks, like are you going to have places to dump your mana, or is it going to be two drops raining the format? What sort of fixing is available? Are you going to be able to do multicolored dirtle decks? Sort of compiling all that stuff and then taking a look at what that leads us to believe about the format. Is it going to be fast? Is it going to be slow? Is it going to be Prince? Is it going to be Pauper? Our best guesses based on those stats that we've compiled. And then for each color, after we do all that, we're going to go through. Ethan and I have already graded every card individually in a spreadsheet that has a lot of other statistics too. We've got all the removal listed, we've got all the tricks listed and rankings for all of those things. We're going to make that available to everyone, and for each color we're going to highlight places where we had different grades for cards. So for example, if I gave a card a B and Ethan gave it a C, we're going to discuss that and take a look at why we had a grading difference there. And basically that's going to be me telling Ethan he's right the whole time. I cannot argue with this man. And we're also going to take a look at top commons and top uncommons for each color. And then after that, this set has something a little different than other limited sets. We've been living in a tribal format the last two sets here with Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan. This set has a lot more two-card interactions and is a lot more open-ended for you to draft. So we're going to take a look at what some of those two-card combinations might be and how you can best jam them into decks built around those synergies.
And for every card that we look at in the episode today, we're only looking at commons and uncommons. So we're not going to be talking about rares or mythics, because as drafters, the bulk of your decks are going to consist of commons and uncommons. And, you know, if a card is a bomb at rare or mythic, you're probably already going to know that, especially in this set with it being a reprint. So we're assuming that our episode is going to be playing in conversation with other limited set reviews that you either listen to or read. So we're hoping to be a good addition to that, a good companion piece to those. And that's what we're hoping that these stats provide you today.
Absolutely. So without further ado, we should get into our grading scale.
Yes. So the grades that we have in the spreadsheet that will be accessible to all in our show notes is going to be, I think, the grading scale that most people use, the limited resources A through F grading scale. So that begins with A's being for bombs, game winners that are good in many situations, especially when behind. These are going to be the best cards in the set, the hyper-efficient removal spells, and bomb rares. So from examples from the last set, Tetsamok Primal Death, Profane Procession, and Hadana's Climb.
Next up are the Bs. They're strong cards that pull you into a color or make you want to play that color, specific reasons to be in a particular color or combination of colors, some of the best commons and good uncommons. So examples of Bs would be Impale, Luminous Bonds, Bombard, Needletooth Raptor, and Thrashing Brontodon.
Cs, these are going to be solid playables, the meat and potatoes of any limited deck, interchangeable, average creatures, normal removal spells, so like Jungleborn Pioneer, Sailor of Means, Dusk Legion Zealot, or Legion Conquistador.
Next up, we've got the Ds. These are your sometimes playable, below average 22nd, 23rd type cards. Some examples of Ds: Pirate's Pillage, Sun Sentinel, Sea Legs, and Aggressive Urge.
Fs. These are the unplayables, cards you should never, ever put in your deck. These are often going to be weird rares, as exampled here, Arcane Adaptation, Silent Gravestone, Sphinx's Decree, and Storm the Vault. And if you did it right, you will have no idea what any of those cards that I just named did for Marvel's.
We were talking about this in the pre-show. I do not know what a single one of those do except Arcane Adaptation. Sideboard cards. Cards that don't make the main deck, but when you board them in can be quite good. Some examples of that from the last set: Cleansing Ray, Negate, and Naturalize.
Build around cards. These are cards that don't do much on their own, but when you build around them, they can be good to great. So think back to the last set, Merfolk Mistbinder as a Merfolk Lord, or Legion's Lieutenant as a Vampire Lord, Knight of the Stampede to reduce the cost of your dinos. Those are going to be good cards to build around.
We're going to have a new category of card this time around called Synergy Cards. These kind of work in tandem with build arounds. They're cards that are not totally worth building around per se, but provide payoffs when they synergize with other cards. So for example, from the last set, Silvergill Adept, the one in a blue for the 2-1 Merfolk that costs 3 more to cast unless you reveal a Merfolk card from your hand, and when it enters the battlefield, you draw a card. That's a great card, but only in a Merfolk deck, but isn't really powerful enough that you want to move into Merfolk 4, so it's kind of like the payoff card or the synergy you get for being Merfolk. Similarly, Daring Buccaneer and Temple Altasaur kind of fall under that same category of card.
Yeah, so we wanted something just a little bit different than build around there. And before we discuss any of the cards, now that we've gone through the grading scale, we just want to look at the returning mechanics. So this is a set entirely of reprints, so we don't have any new mechanics, but they may be new to you if you hadn't played with these cards. So the first of these returning mechanics is going to be cycling. So cycling allows you to discard this card to draw a card, or there's type cycling, and for this this set there's going to be some land cyclers, so cards that either say basic land cycling or maybe like forest cycling. So you discard this card to search for a specific type of card. 15 cards with cycling at common and uncommon in the set, and there is only one payoff, and that's Horror of the Broken Lands at common. That's a 4 and a black for a 4/4 that has cycling on it, but whenever you discard a card or cycle, it gets +2/+1 until end of turn. But that's going to be your only real payoff for cycling in the set.
Next up, we've got Morph. Morphs are creatures that come with an alternate cost of 3, so at any time you can cast a card with Morph for 3 face down as a 2/2 creature, and then at any time you can turn it face up for its Morph cost. So you're essentially hiding what the true nature of your card is by morphing it. So the Morph cost might be for a blue card, 3 blue blue, and then when you pay that Morph cost of 3 blue blue, you turn the card face up, and it does what it actually says on the card. There's also Megamorph in the set, which is the exact same as Morph, but it gives the creature a +1/+1 counter when you flip it face up. So there's 17 total cards with Morph or Megamorph, 14 of those at common or uncommon, and most of the Morph cards are concentrated in the teamer colors, so that would be red, blue, and green. There's one black Morph and one white Morph.
And if you haven't played with Morph before, I would say it's important to know that Morph is not something you respond to. It's not like an instant or a spell that goes on the stack. When a player pays the Morph cost, it happens. The Morph flips up. You can't respond to that.
That is correct, yes. It's also worth noting that the Morph cards are really good mana sinks. So, for example, you can play more expensive cards in your deck, but essentially they're not expensive cards, but because you can always play them on turn 3 as a 2/2. So you might be playing like some green, there's like a green 6/7 Morph that you morph for 3, and then you can pay 5 and a green to unmorph it into a 6/7. So that lets you play more expensive cards without the risk of staring at a hand full of 6 and 7 drops that you can't cast. So Morphs, any card with Morph is gonna be better than it looks if you've never played with Morph before. Just the flexibility of those cards really, really makes them strong.
Yeah, absolutely. The next mechanic that we're going to be looking at is protection from a color. If a permanent has protection from a color, it means 4 things. 1, damage that would be dealt to that permanent by a source of that color is prevented. 2, auras and equipment of that color can't be attached to that permanent. 3, creatures of that color can't block that permanent. And 4, that permanent can't be the target of spells of that color or abilities from sources of that color. So really just means protection from that color in any sense that the game can provide.
Next up, we've got Regenerate. When you regenerate a permanent, you're creating a replacement effect shield to be used later. So that means essentially the next time that the permanent with Regenerate would be destroyed this turn, instead remove all damage marked on it and tap it. If it's an attacking or blocking creature, remove it from combat. So for example, there's a card Ghost Ship in this set. 2 blue blue for a 2/4 flyer with regenerate blue blue blue. If at any point your ghost ship would take lethal damage, you can pay blue blue blue, create a replacement shield for it, a regeneration shield, and then it will survive that damage that would have destroyed it otherwise.
All right, it's time for the stats, baby. I need to know about the stats of the creatures and their power and toughness, Ben.
I will lay it on you. So the average power and toughness in the set, creatures have an average power of 2.39 and an average toughness of 2.60. The median number of power and toughness of all the creatures, there's 99 creatures in the set, is 2 for power and 2 for toughness. So on average, you're going to be facing down bears, or what's the 3 mana for the 2/2 called?
Gray Ogres?
Gray Ogres. Yeah, I said that wrong in our last.
Oh, yeah, you called them Pikers.
Yeah. Or Grey Ogres, as the case may be, depending on their casting cost. The mode is 2 and 2 again, although 1 toughness was very close to the mode, and in fact would have been the mode, but I think you, when you compiled these, you factored in 2 and 2 for all the morphs as well?
I didn't actually. I factored in 3 for the CMC that we'll get to later, but I didn't actually factor in 2 and 2 for the power toughness here.
Okay. The range for the commons in the power is 0 to 6, and for toughness, it's 1 to 7.
The uncommon power and toughness stats are pretty similar. We've got the average power is 2.37, so a little lower, but the average toughness is actually exactly the same at 2.6. Median power toughness is 2.2. The mode power toughness is 1.1, actually, at uncommon, which leads me to believe we've got a lot of utility creatures at uncommon there. And the range of power to toughness is 0 to 9 for power and 1 to 9 for toughness. So what's the sort of like overall stats here for creatures' power toughness here?
So of those 99 creatures, 35 of the 99 creatures have power 2, 27 of the 99 creatures have toughness 2, and 56 of the 99 creatures have toughness 2 or less. So we're looking at a lot of fairly small creatures, probably that have some pretty sweet abilities.
Yeah, for sure. So about half of them looks like they have toughness 2 or less. So moving on to the converted mana cost stats. So here, for each morph creature, I did include its actual CMC and a CMC of 3 to sort of like split the difference of sometimes you're going to cast it face up, sometimes you're going to cast it for its morph cost. Some creatures you're like almost never going to cast for its morph cost, some you're almost never going to cast for its non-morph cost. So the average CMC of the commons and uncommons in the set is 3.25. The median CMC is 3. The mode is 3, but it would be 2 if we didn't include those morph costs. And the range is 1 to 9.
So yeah, so you are looking at a format of gray ogres then, right? 2/2s for 3.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and that would make sense in a format with morphs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what morphs are.
Right.
Now, the last set that had morphs in it was Khans of Tarkir, right?
I think so, yeah.
And that set sort of played out where those creatures were pretty relevant. It didn't feel bad, and most people were often going like, maybe they'd play a 2-drop, but then on turn 3, everyone was basically playing a morph.
Yeah, that format was weird. There was either a gentleman's agreement where nobody played anything before turn 3, and then like some decks just kind of preyed on that fact where they played a bunch of 2-drops that had 2 power, and if you curved out with your 2-drops on 2 power, you just felt really far ahead.
Right, because your 2-drop was trading with their 3-drop, and then if you could back it up with removal or combat tricks, you were just like tempoing them out.
Yep.
So how does the creature power toughness and CMC match up with the removal in this set?
Yeah, the removal, we've got it all listed in the spreadsheet. We're not going to go through all of the removal spells here. We are going to go through the top 5, and for once in our lives, Ethan and I have the same top 5 removal spells.
It's true.
I think there are two things. I think one, we're getting to know each other better, and two, I think we're getting better at evaluating cards. At least I feel that way.
Yeah, I agree.
From having to do all these set reviews from doing the podcast.
But we also could be wrong. This could not be the correct 5, you know?
This could certainly, yes. Obviously, we are not the authorities on Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
We're pretty decent.
Pretty decent. Before we go into the individual 5, I think it's important to note that the removal here is concentrated in non-blue colors, right?
Yes, there is literally no removal in blue that's hard removal.
Right. There's like Blue Elemental Blast, which is a sideboard card, and there's this card Freed from the Reel, which is like a clunky tapper, basically. But there's no like clean removal. We would be like, we would love a Water Knot in this set, for example, but it just doesn't really exist there.
Nope.
And the other thing we wanted to point out was the average converted mana cost of the removal spells, and that is 2.67. So if we match that up with the average CMC for creatures at common and uncommon at 3.25, that means you're going to get a really good rate on average with your removal matching up against the creatures.
Yeah, you're almost gaining 3/4 of a mana, which is, I think, insanely good compared to recent limited formats.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you'd expect to have better removal in a Masters set, but I think that's going to be a big shift mentally for people that are coming from Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan. I think removal is going to be great in this format, and I think we're really going to be getting back to bread.
Yeah, I think removal is going to be king here. So without further ado, we should certainly count down our top 5 removal spells here.
Yeah, so number 5, we've got Fiend Hunter. This is 1WW for a 1/3 creature. When it enters the battlefield, you exile target creature and opponent controls, and that card remains exiled for as long as Fiend Hunter remains on the battlefield.
Quick note about Fiend Hunter. They don't really print cards this way anymore, but they did for this, and it's going to exist in this format. There is like some bounce and some blink here. But because that like block of text of like Fiend Hunter comes into play, exiles the thing until it leaves the battlefield, because that block of text is all in one paragraph, that means that there's some tricky things you can do with like Fiend Hunter comes into play with the trigger on the stat if you stack, if you blink it or bounce it, you're still going to get that effect, and it's going to exile the creature forever.
Permanently.
It's really unintuitive, and that's probably why they don't print that anymore. But there are cards that are going to synergize with exploiting that ability in this set.
In gross fashion.
Yeah, for sure.
It feels really good when you do it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, number four on our list is good old-fashioned Lightning Bolt. Single red mana for the instant, deal 3 damage to target creature or player.
Good, clean, classic. Moving on, number three, we've got Murder. 1 black, black for the instant, destroy target creature.
Number two, he's back, baby. Ravenous Chupacabra. 2 black, black for the 2/2 creature. When it comes into play, destroy target creature.
I think this edges out maybe like something that might seem more powerful in Lightning Bolt for us, at least at the moment, because there's a lot of ways to abuse Enter the Battlefield triggers in this set, and we'll get to some of those later on in the episode. And at number one, probably the best removal spell of all time, single white mana for Swords to Plowshares, instant speed, exile target creature, its controller gains life equal to its power.
Those removal spells are busted. There are also a number of other good and great removal spells on this list in our spreadsheet, so make sure you check those out, have them in mind when you go to your first draft of Masters 25.
Yeah, 22 of them in total, lots of instant speed removal, 1 Pseudo Wrath at uncommon, Pyroclasm for 1 and a red. It's a sorcery that deals 2 damage to each creature.
All right, a few other things, non-maybe creature-related in general, that we wanted to look at was the amount of life gain in the set at common or uncommon. In the past, I think the biggest takeaway when I first started looking at this was after we wrapped up Hour of Devastation. And the amount of incidental life gain in that set really, I think, let that format slow down a bit. It really let those mid-range and control decks catch up to the aggro decks, which made aggro decks, I think, a bit more difficult to get or a bit more difficult to win out because there was so much incidental life gain. And we do have some here, not a ton. There are 7 cards at common and uncommon that gain you life. There are actually a number of cards as well that gain your opponent's life. We just talked about one of them, Swords to Plowshares. But 7 cards that gain you life when you play the card. They are exclusively in the Esper Shards. They're white and black, and there is the white-blue uncommon Cloud Blazer. This is probably the best of the bunch. It's 3 white-blue for a 2/2 flying creature. When it enters the battlefield, you gain 2 life and draw 2 cards. And its sort of counterpoint in black is Bloodhunter Bat, which is 3 and a black for a 2/2 flying creature. When it comes into play, you gain 2 life and your opponents lose 2 life. And there's a few other here that are in our show notes, but not a ton of life gain here that we're looking at, Ben, in this format.
No, I agree. Moving on to mana sinks. So this is another one. We've really felt the lack of these mana sinks, good ones anyway, in Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan recently. So worth noting that there are more mana sinks in this format, but they're not all quality mana sinks. So I think the big place to dump your mana in the set is going to be Morphs. And if you've never played with Morphs, they're a very good mana sink. They make it so that you almost always get to play games of Magic, because at the very worst, you get to pay 3 mana to cast a vanilla 2/2 on turn 3. And even if you end up missing your 5th or 6th land drop, you still get to play Magic with those 2/2s. And then lots of them are like expensive drops, 6 drops, 7 drops, 8 drops, where you can later in the game, after you've played them as a 3 mana 2/2, spend 5, 6, 7 mana to flip them over into a very powerful creature. So I think those are going to be the best of the mana sinks in the set. And there's several others, 9 of them in total, actually 8 that we've got listed, not counting the Morphs, but nothing on the power level of Shapers of Nature or Thundering Spineback from Ixalan. Those were 2 like places cards could just take over the game from dumping mana into them. These are more minor effects that you're going to get for these mana sinks. So for example, there's a card called Coral Helm Guide. It's 1 and a blue for a 2/1, and it has the activated ability of 4 and a blue, target creature can't be blocked this turn. Stuff along those levels, like not game winning effects, but ways to kind of sort of get incremental advantage.
Yeah, for sure. Looking at the wraths in the set, you already discussed basically the only one at common or uncommon in Pyroclasm. That's the 1 in a red, deal 2 to all creatures at sorcery speed. And then we have 4 sweepers at rare. So there's Achroma's Vengeance. This is 4 white-white for sorcery, destroy all artifacts, creatures, and enchantments. It also has cycling 3 on it. There's Living Death, which is 3 black-black. If you've been playing the cube, you've seen this card around. It's a sorcery, and it basically swaps all creatures in play with all all creatures in graveyards. So you exile all the creatures you have in play, then you bring creatures from graveyard into play, and then the exiled creatures go into the graveyard. There's Pernicious Deed, which is one black green for an enchantment, and you can pay X to sacrifice Pernicious Deed and destroy all artifacts, creatures, and enchantments with converted mana cost X or less.
Love me a Pernicious Deed.
Important to note, and there is a token theme in this format, that you can just crack Pernicious Deed for zero and kill all tokens, because tokens have converted mana cost of zero. And finally, there is Plague Wind, which is 7 black for a sorcery. Destroy all creatures your opponents control. They can't be regenerated.
I'm really glad that that's in this set, because everyone throws around the term Plague Wind. I've never actually played with that card. Like, I mean, I know what it is just from everyone saying Plague Wind. I'd never seen that card before looking at this spoiler.
Yeah, well, we've been used to it for 3 mana with Golden Demise.
Yeah.
But now it's back at 9 mana at rare.
Next up, we've got Mana Fixing, and boy, oh, is there a lot of it, and is it good?
This is the category I've been waiting to talk about, Ben.
Yes. Oh, I know. Me too. So there's the full cycle of land cycling creatures at common. So what that is, it's a cycle of 5 cards, a creature of each color, that have land cycling for the basic land type of their color. For example, the red one is Chartreuse Cougar, which is 5 and a red for a 4/4. And it's got fire breathing, and then it's got mountain cycling. So for 2 mana, you can cycle it and go search a mountain up out of your deck. There's a card that's got island cycling, swamp cycling, so on and so forth, 1 for each color. There's Utopia Sprawl, which is uncommon. It's Enchant Forest. When it enters the battlefield, you choose a color. Whenever Enchanted Forest is tapped for mana, its controller adds 1 mana of the chosen color to his or her mana pool. So that's doing double duty there. That's ramping you and fixing you, which is insane for a single green mana. There's Prophetic Prism. This is colorless fixing. Filtering, rather, not fixing. 2 mana for the artifact. When it enters the battlefield, draw a card, and you can pay a single mana and tap Prophetic Prism to add a mana of any color to your mana pool, so you can essentially change the color of the mana. Ash Barrens. This is a land that can tap to add colorless mana to your mana pool, and it's also got basic land cycling of 1. So you can pay 1 mana, discard Ash Barrens, and search up any basic land out of your deck. So somewhere in between the goodness of Traveler's Amulet and Evolving Wilds, better than Traveler's Amulet, not quite as good as Evolving Wilds. There's Myriad Landscape. Myriad Landscape enters the battlefield tapped. You can tap it to add a colorless mana to your mana pool, and you can pay 2 tap, sacrifice Myriad Landscape, search your library for up to 2 basic land cards that share a land type, so 2 mountains, 2 forests, etc. Put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. So that's sort of it's essentially a rampant growth effect for 3, right? Because you're paying 2 mana plus tapping the Myriad Landscape to net yourself ultimately 1 land. So not great, but we'll do the job in a pinch. Cultivate. This is 2 and a green for a sorcery. Search your library for up to 2 basic lands. Put one of them onto the battlefield tapped, one of them into your hand. That's some premium mana fixing and card advantage there. And Crocin Tusker as well. 5 green for the 6/5. It has cycling of 2 and a green. And when you cycle it, you may search your library for a basic land card, reveal that card, and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. So you're drawing a card and you're getting a basic land out of your deck. So a built-in 2-for-1 there when you cycle it.
Yeah, so I think important summary here is there are 3 pieces of fixing at common. We've got Cultivate, that's the green spell. We've got Prophetic Prism, that's the artifact that lets you filter and it replaces itself. And we've got the full cycle of the creature land cyclers. And then at uncommon, we've got 2 more pieces of green fixing in Crows and Tusker and Utopia Sprawl, and 2 more pieces of colorless fixing, which with the 2 lands, Ash Barrens and Myriad Landscape. So a lot of mana fixing there. A lot of splish splashing around is going to be happening for me in Masters 25. I can feel it.
Oh, yeah.
The last thing we wanted to look at was flying. We talked a lot in Rivals and Ixalan about flying sort of being the scourge of that format. Like, you just needed to be able to answer flyers if you wanted to not be getting beaten down by them all the time. So in this format, 15 commons and uncommons. So 15 of the 99 creatures have flying. This is concentrated in the Esper Shard, not surprisingly, in white, blue, and black. There is 1 creature with reach, and that's Ember Weaver. That's 2 and a green for a 2/3 spider with reach. And if you control a red permanent, Ember Weaver gets +1/+0 and has first strike. So not a ton there, and there is Plummet in green. So we may be back to, depending on how good these flyers are in the Esper colors, we may be back to, if you're in a green black or a green red deck, you may need to be main decking some Plummets there.
Yeah, so I think it's worth noting that this is almost exactly the stats of like flyers and creatures with reach in Rivals of Ixalan. And we know how, like, that's like a legitimate plan to win the game in Rivals of Ixalan, just to clog up the ground and win with flyers. So it looks like that might be something similar that we can expect from this format here, and we'll have to keep an eye on that.
For sure. All right, so what we want to do now is not go through all of the grades that we did for each of the commons and uncommons, but take a look at the cards where Ben and I differed, where we had at least two gradations different in our scoring of these cards, and maybe discuss, maybe we'll see if I can convince Ben, if he can convince me, if we missed out on something. We may just have to see how the format shakes out, and then we're going to rank our top commons and uncommons from each color after that.
Yeah, let's do it.
The first card we wanted to look at here is in white. We're going to look at all the white cards that we differed on. And this is Corona's Zealot. This is 4 and a white for a 2/5 human cleric. It has a morph cost of 3 white-white. So that means you can pay 3 to play it as a 2/2 face down. And then at any time you may pay 3 white-white to flip it up. And it says when Corona's Zealot is turned face up, all damage that would be dealt to it this turn is dealt to target creature instead. So I'm not as excited about this as you are. I give this a C-.
I give this a B-. I'm pretty excited about this card. Talk to me why you're down on it.
I think that this is a bit much. Like, I think once you get to... So we should note, talking about the morphs, is that they've put the rule that they did in Khans of Tarkir, where that if a creature can blow out another creature in combat, meaning, like, it could flip up into something bigger than a 2/2, it has to have a morph cost of 5 or more. So when you get to the morph cost of 5, like when an opponent has a morph in play and they pass with 5 mana up, your alarm bells are going to go off because now they're in the territory of being able to trade up, or not trade up, but to be able to blow you out, essentially, to eat your smaller creatures. So I just feel like this is going to be a little easy to play around. Maybe not early, but I feel like, you know, we're in Divine Verdict territory here.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So I think I am going to revise my grade a little bit. I think you're right. So when I was looking at this card, I was just thinking, oh, great, that's a 2-for-1. Like, I'm going to get a creature on the battlefield and I'm going to kill one of my opponent's creatures.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome to me. But I think you're right. It's going to be fairly easy to play around because it requires, one, your opponent to attack into it, and two, you to have 5 open mana.
Mm-hmm.
Right, which are not easy conditions to set up, as we've seen from Divine Verdict. So I think I still think this card's good, but maybe not B-. I'm gonna go down to C+.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like, I will play this, and I don't imagine cutting this from many white decks, I don't think, but it's not like pulling me into white. Like, I just think it's not as exciting as it may seem. It definitely looks very flashy and looks very like, oh, I'm gonna get that 2-for-1, but I think it requires your opponent to really walk into it blindfolded, basically.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I think I had a little best case scenario mentality there. And I do know that's my weakness when I'm evaluating cards. I think that's why I'm a good teacher, though. You know, I just want to see the best in people.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right. Ordeal of Heliod. 1 and a white for the enchantment. This is enchant creature. This is from the Theros block. So if you just played that Theros flashback, this is going to look familiar. When enchanted creature attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Then if it has 3 or more +1/+1 counters on it, sacrifice Ordeal of Heliod. When you sacrifice Ordeal of Heliod, you gain 10 life. So these can snowball pretty quickly if you land them on an early aggressive creature. You gave this a D+. I gave this a C.
The removal is so good in this format, Ben.
It really is.
Aren't you just going to get 2-for-1 so often?
Probably, yeah.
Especially because, like, the benefit of this card in Theros block was, like, sometimes you could trigger heroic, and that would give the creature a +1/+1 counter, right? Like, so you wouldn't have to get in with 3 attacks with this. Maybe you'd only need to get in with 2, or sometimes only 1, for it to pop off and gain you the 10 life.
Yeah, you're just right, I think. Again, I told you, like, I announced it at the beginning of the show, people. I'm just going to be agreeing with Ethan. He's great.
Okay.
The removal's a lot better than it was in the Theros block, and there's a lack of heroic. There's, like, God's Willing in the set, but I assume there's more powerful things to do in this set than suit up a thing with Ordeal of Heliod and Prey.
Yeah, I'm so curious because there is a good bit of life. There's, like, you know, there's, like, we talked about the cards that have life gain on them, this being one of them. There aren't any payoffs. We think back to Iconic Masters, there was, like, a black-white life gain matters deck. I wish there was something here for that, but there doesn't really seem to be that. So I don't see the benefit of Ordeal. It doesn't feel like it's worth the effort to gain that 10 life.
I agree. I think I got you on this next one, though.
Okay, I'm excited to hear about this. So we've got Promise of Bunrei. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. This is 2 and a white for an enchantment. When a creature you control dies, sacrifice Promise of Bunrei. If you do, create 4/1/1 colorless spirit creature tokens. They are colorless spirit creature tokens. They do not have flying.
Do not have flying. I'm aware.
Okay.
So you gave this a C-. You gave this a D. I gave this a C+.
I think that's our biggest difference.
That's a pretty big gap. So there's a tokens deck in the format that we're going to get into, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is.
And so 4 separate bodies is a big deal, and especially all entering the battlefield at the same time, if you can get lucky enough to trigger this yourself, maybe through a sacrifice outlet or something like that. But I think the main card that this is going to combine with is an enchantment that's pretty sweet called Valor in Akros. 3 and a white, whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. So if you can find a sacrifice outlet for a creature with Valor in Akros in play, you're going to be giving all creatures you control +4/+4, which is huge. There's also some other cards that synergize well with this that we'll get into a little later, but the one that springs to mind is Echoing Courage. It's a green, 1 and a green for an instant. Target creature gets +2/+2. And then all creature types that share a name with it gets +2/+2 as well. So turning your 4/1/1s into 4/3/3s is a pretty big game. I think this card just has enough synergy throughout the format that it's really going to prove to be a player.
Yeah, you could be right. You're also describing some magical Christmas lands here. You're talking about playing a 3-mana enchantment that does nothing into a 4-mana enchantment that does nothing, that then you need to have some way to trigger a creature dying to get your 4/1/1s, and then you have to have other creatures in play to benefit all your creatures getting +4/+4 until end of turn. That's a lot you're asking.
Do you hear this guy? Just negative Nancy. Complain, complain, complain. Where are the dreamers? Where have the dreamers gone?
I'm just trying to keep your glass half empty, Ben. That's all I'm trying to do.
I'm not coming down on this one. I think this card has promise. Even not in the magical Christmas land scenarios, I think the 4 bodies are going to be relevant enough. There's also a lot of pump effects. Even if you're not going off insanely, I think just having 4 separate bodies, there are going to be a lot of ways to take advantage of that in the format.
I think you're probably right. I think I could get down with you giving it like a synergy C+. Because I don't think you can just jam this in any white deck.
I would agree with that. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So I think you maybe need to like have a token theme or have a way to reliably kill one of your creatures, have a way to abuse the fact that you have 4/1/1, something like that. Like, I just don't think you can be like, cool, I'm taking this and I'm putting this in my deck because I'm white. I think that's where I'm going to land on it.
I'll buy it.
All right. The last one. What do we want to talk about here?
Urbis Protector, it looks like. 4 white-white for a 1/1 human cleric. When it enters the battlefield, create a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying. I give this a B, you gave it a C.
Yeah, I think this is a little expensive.
It is a little expensive. I'm thinking a synergy B again here, I guess, although I didn't notate that. There's a lot of ways to pick up creatures in the format. There's ways to blink things. I just think enter the battlefield triggers that are good are going to be really good, and I think this is a really strong enter the battlefield trigger. I'm maybe a little high. Maybe it's a B-, but I think I like it at B-.
But you think it's a pull into white for you?
Yes, I think this makes me want to move into a white deck that's trying to blink things.
Yeah, because there is, I mean, so there's, we're talking about blinking, so there's Cloud Shift at common. We'll get into this in our synergies, but I think it's worth talking about here. There's Cloud Shift, which is a single white for an instant that basically blink a creature you control, you exile a creature you control, and then return it to the battlefield under your control. So that would be sweet with Urbis Protector to make another 4/4. And there's also White Mane Lion, which is 1 and a white for a 2/2 creature with flash. When it enters the battlefield, you may return, oh no, not you may return, you do return a creature you control to its owner's hand. So you get to pick that up and then recast it again to make another 4/4. So yeah, that's true. I could get down with that. And the fact that there's those two in the color that Urbis Protector is at common, I can get down with B- on Urbis Protector.
All right.
All right, let's go through our top commons and uncommons here for white before we move on to our next color. So at number 3, my number 3 common for white is Geist of the Moors. This is 1 white-white for a 3/1 creature with flying.
Yeah, I was torn between that and what I ended up settling on as the number 3 top white common. I picked Dauntless Cathar. That's same mana cost, 2 and a white for a 3/2 human soldier, and has the ability 1 and a white, exile Dauntless Cathar from your graveyard, create a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying, activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery. So 3/2, that gives you a little bit of value there.
And I believe both of those were downshifted. I know Geist of the Moors was an uncommon when it was printed.
Dauntless Cathar, I think, was a common.
Was a common? Yeah, mm-hmm. It was very good. But my number 2, we've got our ones and our twos swapped here. My number 2 is Path of Peace. This is 3 and a white for a sorcery. Destroy target creature. Its owner gains 4 life.
And then pacifism, you have it 1. I have it 2. Classic 1 and a white. Target creature can't attack or block. So I've got Path of Peace at 1.
So talk to me about that. Because, you know, from our discussion of how removal matches up with creatures, pacifism gives you that, like, good trade on mana, whereas Path of Peace doesn't necessarily.
Right, but I think one other thing we noted is that there's also a lot of utility creatures in the set, and pacifism doesn't do anything against those utility creatures, and I've even felt that in Rivals of Ixalan, to where, you know, I really want to get my opponent's Legion Lieutenant off the battlefield, and I can't with my Luminous Bonds. So I think, while pacifism is great, I think it's going to be interesting to see how these shake out. There's also minor synergy with Path of Peace with making your opponent gain life. There's a couple cards that pay you off for doing that. Mm-hmm. But I think there's just a lot of cards that have effects that are very good. And I think a removal spell that just gets something off the table is going to be a lot cleaner of an answer and is maybe going to be worth paying 2 more mana than for pacifism.
This may end up being the thing where, like, you want the first Path of Peace, but then you want the first pacifism before you want the second Path of Peace kind of thing.
I could certainly see that being it.
Yeah, that you may have talked me into switching these two. All right, and we are in full agreement here for our uncommons. We had Fiend Hunter at 2. This cracked our top 5 removal spells, as you will remember. This is the 1 white, 1/3 that Oblivion rings a creature until it leaves the battlefield.
And then at 1, we've got Swords to Plowshares, the white mana instant speed. Exile target creature, and that creature's controller gains life equal to its power.
Not much to discuss there. Moving on to blue, where I think we have the most to discuss.
Ooh, I am psyched about this.
We're going to start off with a classic here. Counterspell is at common. That's blue for the instant counter target spell. Beautiful 3 words there. I gave this card a B-.
I gave it a C.
Yeah, so this is one of our biggest differences. I think we can spoil it here. This is my top. I have this peg as the top blue common, and this didn't even crack your top blue commons. Is that right?
Didn't crack my top blue commons, no.
All right, so you talk to me about why you're down on Counterspell here.
So Counterspell is essentially cancel for 1 less mana. So, and I think cancel's fine in limited, and I don't think making it 1 mana cheaper makes it that much better. I'd be happy main decking Counterspell, but it doesn't make me want to play blue. Blue is a very prohibitive mana cost. And leaving up blue is a very real cost. 2 mana is still a lot to leave up. Yes, you have the upside of, like, being able to nab their 2-drop or their 3-drop and not fall behind with a counterspell, but I don't think it does enough in limited that it pulls me into blue. Like, I'll play it in my blue decks, but I'm not thrilled about it.
So here's my argument for Counterspell to bring you up on it. This set, more, we were talking about this set more like, more than other Master sets, feels like Cube. It's not synergy driven so much as it is, like, you decide how you're going to build your deck as you draft and what sort of, like, card interactions you're going to be able to get maximum value from. In Cube, the 2-mana counterspells are great, and counterspells become better in multiples, I think, in Cube. That's how I sort of think about them, that, like, the more counterspells I have, the better my deck becomes, I think. I think they just get better in multiples as you're able to, like, consistently be able to pass with mana up and combine them with other instants that exist in blue or whatever your color pair is. The other thing I'm going to say is that Counterspell was at common in, what was it, Vintage Masters, which they just re-released back in December that we both played a bit of.
Uh-huh.
And Counterspell was a fantastic common in that set. Now, that set was a bit more spell-driven because it was, you know, only cards in Vintage, and there's not a lot of great creatures back then, and they're sort of clunky. But Counterspell was, I think, very, very good in that set, and I am pretty sure that it's going to be very, very good in this set.
Interesting. I just don't feel that way. And I think another thing that hurts Counterspell is the best card draw is sorcery speed, not instant speed. So in blue, I think the best source of card advantage is Sift. That's 3 and a blue for a sorcery, draw 3 cards, then discard a card. You can't afford to, like, tap out for Sift. Like, it would be great if Sift was an instant. Then I'd be a lot more likely to want to value Counterspell. So the only instant speed card draw there is Accumulated Knowledge, which is 1 blue for an instant, draw a card, then draw cards equal to the number of cards named Accumulative Knowledge in all graveyards. So the first one you can trip, the second one you draw to, the third one, if you get to live the dream, you get a Ancestral Recall for 2 mana. That's not a great card to have in your deck. So I think you're going to struggle to get card advantage if your plan is to trade 1 for 1 with Counterspells.
You know what Counterspell is also really good with? Is Morphs.
Yeah, that's fair.
Pass with your mana up. They don't do anything you want to do. You get to unmorph your creature. If not, you get to Counterspell their thing. I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out. But I'm excited about Counterspell at common, and I think it's going to be a powerful card.
That's really interesting. We'll have to check in on it.
Yeah, for sure. What do we got next?
Next up, we've got Mystic of the Hidden Way. This is 4 and a blue for a 3/2 human monk, and Mystic of the Hidden Way cannot be blocked, and it's got a morph cost of 2 and a blue. So you can pay it for 3 mana 2/2, and then if you pay 2 and a blue, you get to turn it face up and have it be unblockable. I gave this a D+, you gave it a C+.
So my memory of this card from Cons of Tarkir was that it was very good.
That's interesting. My memory of from Cons of Tarkir was that it was kind of mediocre.
This is a win condition at common. I think this is like, it's got two sides that are good, a 3-mana 2/2, as we talked about, a Grey Ogre is fine. And then when you flip this up, this is a real clock. Your opponent has to kill it. You're going to have to trade a removal spell for this, or you're going to die to it.
Yeah, but it's so clunky. You're spending 6 mana to get your 3/2. Like, even the 3 and a blue for the 3/2 unblockable merfolk where you bounce a creature, I think this is a similar amount of clunky to that. Maybe not quite as clunky, but I don't think you're going to be needing to go out of your way to pick this up if you want it in your deck.
Mm, yeah.
I don't even think every deck's going to want it, necessarily.
I don't know. I don't know how... Well, I have no idea, but I don't know how many times you're cutting this from your blue deck. We'll have to see. I might bring it down to C. Maybe C plus is too high. I'm going to change my grade to C, but I think this card is still pretty good.
Okay.
Next up, we barely need to talk about this. This is Phantasmal Bear. Single blue for a 2/2 bear illusion. When it becomes the target of a spell or ability, you sacrifice it. I don't know what I was thinking. I gave this a C-. Maybe I was excited about, like, some sort of aggro deck in blue, but it just doesn't seem like it exists.
No, I gave this a D-. I think this card's not good. I think there are ways to target it in the set for not loss of value. I just think it's not what you want to be doing.
Yeah, I agree. I'm down to D- with you. All right, we got to talk about your girl here.
I am so excited to talk about this card. Well, this is Jaleera, Master Polymorphist. 3 and a blue for a 2/2 legendary human wizard, and she's got the ability 2 and a blue, tap, sacrifice another creature, reveal cards from the top of your library. Why are you laughing? That's a great ability.
I'm laughing because I'm just remembering. You should finish reading what the card does, and then I'll tell you why I'm laughing.
Okay. Reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a non-legendary creature card. Put that card onto the battlefield and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
Yeah, so we were going over the show notes before we recorded, and we got on this card and Counterspell, because blue is where we had the most differences. And I was like, did you play with this? You remember this card in the set it was originally printed? And Ben was like, no, what set was it in? And it's in some M set. I guess, it's in the Watermark. M15 is where it was printed. And it was not good in that format. And I want you to tell me why you're so excited about this card.
It's going to be great here. We're going to make it great again.
Not true. Now, you can't be great again because it was never great.
I'm sure it was great and you're just misremembering.
Okay.
Okay, so I gave this card... This is by far our biggest difference. Ethan gave this card a D. I gave it a B-. I think sacrifice outlets are good, and there are threatened effects in the format.
A threatened effect, right?
Or there is two threatened effects, yeah, but one good threatened effect, yeah. Where you take your opponent's creature, and then you get to use it for the turn, and then you give it back to them. So you could potentially set up shenanigans where you sacrifice your opponent's creature and get your own creature out of the deck with Jaleera. If you're holding up 2 and a blue, it turns off, essentially, removal from your opponent. So if they target your creature that's going to die, you can tap Jaleera, sacrifice the creature, get a new creature. There's a lot of token things going on in the set. So you can sacrifice tokens and upgrade them into bigger creatures. There's gigantic morphs in the set where, like, you can play more big clunky cards than you would be able to normally. And if you hit a morph with Jaleera, you're getting to play your giant fat creature for way cheaper. I just think there's, like, tons and tons and tons of upside with this card, and I am so psyched to go off with it.
Oh my god. This is a 4-mana, this is a 4-mana 2/2, which is embarrassing in this set. Like, and your argument of, like, all their removal, if you hold up 3 mana, they're just gonna kill Jaleera. And they're gonna kill it with, like, a 2-mana spell.
But that's really sad, and...
Like, it can't do it to itself. Like, if it could sacrifice itself, I could see it, but it can't. So it's just gonna be a giant lightning rod for your opponent's removal. And in the event that you can do some shenanigans with it, you're not even guaranteed to get anything good. It's random. So, like, you sacrifice something. Let's say you live the dream and you could even sacrifice something under a pacifism. You're not even guaranteed to get something good. Like, you might just get something that's irrelevant on the board.
You probably hate lottery tickets too, don't you?
I do hate lottery tickets.
I do too. But I don't know. This card, I just love the idea of this card.
I agree. It's a sweet card. It's just not good.
I'm on a 3-0 with Jaleera in my deck.
Okay. I accept that challenge.
And then I'm going to tweet it at you. Great. And please, everyone that's listening to the podcast right now, just pile on Twitter.
Yeah, any 3-0 lists with Jaleer. I want those board states. I want those best case scenario screenshots of Jaleer going off.
Okay, so maybe like realistically C? Can we meet in the middle?
I'm not meeting you in the middle. I'm staying in the D's. And maybe D plus, but I'm staying in the D's. This card, I do not think you should be putting this card in your deck.
Okay, I'm going to go C plus. C plus.
All right, let's get to those top commons and uncommons. I can't wait for Jaleer to be your best uncommon.
She didn't crack my uncommon.
All right, so I have Sift as my third best blue common. This is, we talked about this, the card draw spell, 3 and a blue for a sorcery speed. Draw 3 cards, then discard a card.
I also have that as my number 3. My number 2 is Ghost Ship. 2 blue blue for the 2/4 creature with flying and regenerate blue blue blue.
Yeah, that card is really good. I have Manowar at number 2. This is 2 and a blue for the 2/2 jellyfish that enters the battlefield and bounces a creature.
I've got that as my number 1.
And I have Counterspell as my number 1. So we'll definitely have to see how Counterspell shakes out there, because I could definitely see having to rejigger my top 3 there if I'm wrong about Counterspell.
Yeah, that'll be a good one to keep an eye on. In uncommons, we're both in total agreement. Number 2, Merfolk Looter. That's 1 and a blue for the 1/1 tap to draw a card, then discard a card. Always loot. And Murder of Crows, 3 blue blue for the 4/4 flying. Whenever another creature dies, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card.
That card is absurdly good. I'm excited to play with that again.
Yeah, Air Elemental with upside.
All right, black. We don't have much to discuss here. The first up is Dirge of Dread. That's 2 and a black for the sorcery. All creatures gain fear until end of turn. And it has cycling for 1 and a black. And it says when you cycle Dirge of Dread, you may have target creature gain fear until end of turn. So for those who don't know, fear says that the creature can't be blocked except by black creatures and or artifact creatures.
Yeah, so you gave this a D, I gave this a C+. Mm-hmm. I might be a little high at C+, but I think it's better than a D. So the fact that you get an incremental amount of value when you cycle it, you're going to be able to get in a creature for some amount of damage, presumably. Mm-hmm. And unless you're playing against a black deck, when you cast this, like, it's a falter effect that's probably winning you the game. So I think like that powerful of an effect on a card with cycling is just good.
Yeah, I guess I didn't. So my follow-up question to you is going to be, why is this so different from Choking Tethers? So Choking Tethers is the blue sort of version of this, which has cycling for 1 and a blue. And when you cast Choking Tethers for 4, you can tap 4 creatures at instant speed. And when you cycle it for 1 and a blue, you just get to tap 1 creature. So you gave that a D. This isn't much different from that, right?
No, you're right. It's not. So I probably am high at C+. Maybe it's like a C. Maybe they're both like C- D+ type cards.
Yeah, I think maybe they're both C-. That seems fine to me. I didn't quite clock that, like, you can cycle this when it's not good, and then it's just going to win you the game when it is good. And having a card like that, that's a flip or like a dual card, basically it has like 2 modes, is pretty powerful.
Yep.
That seems fine. Getting it up to C- range seems good to me.
All right, next up we've got Unearth. This is single black for a sorcery. Return target card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, and it's got cycling 2.
Yeah, I gave this a C.
I gave it a D.
I think this card is good. I mean, I think for the similar reasons of what we were just talking about with Dirge of Dread, like, either you're going to pay 2 to draw a card and replace it, like, when you don't need this card, or you're going to be getting equal or trading up on mana. Like, being able to pay 1 mana to get a 3-drop back from your graveyard to the battlefield is pretty strong.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering how relevant 3-drops are going to be at that point in the game by the time they've already died. But if you've got relevant 3-drops, certainly could be good.
I mean, what I would say to you is, I think what we're sort of discovering, or that we are hinting at in this crash course, is that a lot of those 2- and 3-drop creatures are utility creatures. So they're going to be, like getting back a Merfolk Looter, because they're going to want to kill that. You know, I think there are going to be some 2- and 3-drops and 1-drops that you may want to just get back, because not because they're, you know, efficient beaters, but because they have relevant abilities.
I think you're right about that. I think I would go up to C- on this.
Cool. We got one more here at Uncommon. This is Undead Gladiator. It's 1 black-black for a 3/1. It has 1 and a black, discard a card, return Undead Gladiator from your graveyard to your hand. Activate this ability only during your upkeep, and it has cycling for 1 and a black.
So I gave this a D, you gave this a C.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm looking at this, I think one black for a 3-1 is terrible. That's like overpaying for a raptor companion.
Yeah.
I think like the upside of like discard, like, so you can, the trick with this card is you could cycle it to get a new card and then it's in your graveyard. And then you can buy it back later in the game and pitch a land. But that seems like a horribly clunky way to try to like loot.
It's basically four mana to loot.
Yes. That seems not good to me.
Maybe that's just terrible. maybe it's just terrible. You're right. Okay, let's go down to D+.
All right.
Yeah, that's fair. That didn't take much. I don't know what I was thinking. All right, top black commons. Number 3, I've got Ruthless Ripper, which is a single black for a 1/1 human assassin with death touch. It has a morph cost. There's a couple cards here. This is one of them that the morph cost is not a mana cost, but a reveal a black card in your hand. And when Ruthless Ripper is turned face up, a target player loses 2 life. I think Typhoid Rats is just good, and being able to like morph and surprise to kill a thing and even make them lose 2 life, it's all upside. I remember this card being quite strong.
Yeah, card's very good. I think there's a lot of cards that maybe could take over the number 3 slot at black. I picked a different one. I picked Phyrexian Ghoul. It's 2 and a black for a 2/2, and has the ability to sacrifice a creature, and it gets +2/+2 until end of turn. And here's why I did Phyrexian Ghoul over Ruth, and I'm going to see if I can talk you into it. I think Ruth is just a fine card on her own, mm-hmm. but doesn't have any particular synergy in the format, and I think Phyrexian Ghoul is going to be the linchpin of one of the main like combo decks in the format, and I think there's a lot of value that you can get out of a free sacrifice outlet like that. So I think the fact that it enables a whole deck is going to give it the nudge over Ruthless Ripper.
Yep, you got me. Easy. Phyrexian Ghoul is my 3.
So, and what we're talking about there's a threaten effect. Is it actual threaten that's in the...
No, it's Act of Treason.
Act of Treason. So that is 2 and a red, gain control of target creature until end of turn, untap that creature, it gains haste until end of turn. So you steal your opponent's creature with Act of Treason, and then you sacrifice it with Phyrexian Ghoul. You get in a big hit with a 4/4, and your opponent's out their creature. And that's, like, traditionally, Black-Red has had that, like, combination in a lot of the core sets.
There's also a card at Uncommon in Black, Zulaport Cutthroat, which is 1 and a black for a 1/1. Whenever a creature you control dies, your opponent loses a life and you gain a life. So if you get to combine that with like a sacrifice outlet and maybe some tokens or even like stealing your opponent's stuff like we talked about, like there, you're right, there is a lot of synergies with Phyrexian Ghoul in the format. So I like that as the third common.
Number 2, we've got the same one here. This is Disfigure, single black, instant. Target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. Just super efficient. Can also be used as a combat trick to take down bigger stuff. And as we noted, the average power and toughness in the set is 2/2, so going to kill most things. And there's a lot of good, cheap utility creatures that you're going to want to pick off.
Absolutely. And number 1, no surprise, Murder, 1 black for the instant, destroy target creature.
On to the uncommons, number 2 and 1, we've got the same ones here. Number 2, Fallen Angel. I love this card from when I was a kid. 3 black for a 3/3 angel, and it has the ability, it has flying, and sacrifice a creature to give it +2/+1 until end of turn. So we've already seen that flying is a commodity in the set, so this swinging in, sacrificing 2 or 3 creatures for a huge hit to kill your opponent out of nowhere is definitely a thing.
Yeah, threat of activation on this card is real tricky. Like, this is going to be tough to take down in combat without just like a removal spell to get rid of it cleanly.
And another free sacrifice outlet for the Act of Treason deck.
Exactly. And number 1, Ravenous Chupacabra. That's the 2 black 2/2. Enters the battlefield, destroys a creature.
Yeah.
All right, what red card do we want to discuss here?
We've only got 1. I am so excited to talk to you about this card. I love this card. I had to restrain myself when I was grading it. So Browbeat is, this is what we call Punisher cards. This is 2 and a red for a sorcery, and your opponent gets to choose one of these effects. Either they take 5 damage, or you draw 3 cards. You gave this a D, I gave this a C, and I had to try so hard to not give it better than a C. I wanted to really give this like a B minus or a B.
Why?
I have such fond memories from when I was a kid. I had a red burn deck, and Browbeat's so good in a focused, aggressive deck because both things are good for you. And yeah, you're going to get the worst of the two of you at the time, but in a red deck, if their life total's low and you're drawing 3 cards, you're probably going to find a way to kill them in those 3 cards. So it just felt like they were losing no matter what when you cast Browbeat. I just remember loving this card.
So real talk, because you're not wrong, like this, you know, if you could have 4 of these in a constructed deck, like a focused burn deck, it might be good. Like, do you think that there's that deck available in this format?
I think red looks really aggressive.
Yeah.
And you're going to be able to draft multiple browbeats. I don't think it's unrealistic that you could get like 3, 4 maybe. It's a common.
No, it's uncommon.
Is it uncommon?
Yeah.
It's uncommon. You'll be able to get 3, 4, 5 easy.
Yeah, I don't know if you will. I'm not sure how aggressive this format is. Because there's not really like burn. Like, can Kindle go to the face?
Kindle can go to the face. Lightning Bolt can go to the face. Cinderstorm, 6 and a red for a sorcery, deals 7 damage to target creature or player. Exactly what you want in your burn deck.
Come on.
Goes to the face.
Yeah, 7 drops are exactly what you want in a burn deck. Yeah, I mean, and there's Jackal Puff. There's 1 drops at common.
There's Chandra's Outrage. There might be a mono red deck if red's open.
There might be a mono red deck. Frenzied Goblin. I could see it. All right, we'll be on the lookout. I gave Browbeat a D.
I gave it a C. I think it's probably like a D plus.
I could really see myself never casting this in this format.
Oh, I'm going to be trying to cast it for sure, if for nothing other than nostalgia value.
Great. All right. What was your number 3 common in red?
Number 3 common. I'm going to try to talk you up here as well.
Okay.
Hordling Outburst. This is 1 red for the sorcery. Make 3/1/1 goblin tokens.
Okay. I gave my number 3 spot to Balduvian Horde. This is 2 red for a 5/5. When it enters the battlefield, you sacrifice it unless you discard a card at random. Oh, snap. You know what I just realized?
What?
This isn't, whatever, Brawling Minotaur, because you have to have a card to discard.
Yes.
You can't play this with 0 cards in your hand.
You cannot.
Oh, that's way worse. Oh, that's way worse.
Yeah, so I almost gave my number 3 slot to Balduvian Horde. This is downshifted from rare. This was a rare in Alliances from when I was a kid. And I remember having my Balduvian Horde, like, plastic sleeved up in a hard case. Like, I was so proud of my Balduvian Horde. And I just don't think it's going to pull its weight here, which is sad. Because the removal is so good. I just think you're going to get 2-for-1. If it had Trample or something, I could maybe see it, but just a 5/5 vanilla, I don't think is going to get the job done in a set that's this high powered.
But, and even, let's say even they don't have a clean removal spell, like, if you trade with like a 2/2 and a 3/3 in combat, that's fine. That's a 2/2.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that big of a deal. Yeah, I think you're right. This card might not be great.
So, and I do think Hordling Outburst is going to be great, similar to Phyrexian Ghoul. I think there's, we're going to talk about this more in detail in a little bit, but there are tokens strategies, and having the ability to make 3/1/1s before combat, you know, we already talked about that white enchantment that pumps +1/+1 whenever a creature enters the battlefield, that synergizes very well with that. There's Trumpet Blast in the set, 2 in a red, attacking creatures get +2/+0. I just think this is going to be a really strong progenitor of an archetype in the format.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I've been thinking about, like, you know, I'm like, this set is like Cube. Hordling Outburst isn't that great in Cube. But, like, Hordling Outburst was great in Khans of Tarkir, and it was uncommon there. And this is common, so you're going to be able to get multiples of these and abuse it with the things you said. It's really good with the Phyrexian Ghoul, because it gives it 3 bodies to chomp on, or whatever, Fallen Angel, more like 3 bodies again to sacrifice.
Yeah, and with that Zulaport Cutthroat, you're draining 3 times.
Yeah, ooh, I want this Black-Red Sacrifice deck to be good so bad. Okay, never mind. Hordling Outburst, you got me.
Yes!
Okay.
All right. Chandra's Outrage at number 2. We're the same here. This is 2 red for the instant. Chandra's Outrage deals 4 damage to target creature and 2 damage to that creature's controller.
And number 1, we've got Kindle. This is 1 and a red for the instant. It deals X damage to target creature or player, where X is 2, plus the number of cards named Kindle in all graveyards. So we talked about accumulated knowledge is the blue version of this that cares about the number of cards named accumulated knowledge in all graveyards. So it's not only you, but your opponent's graveyard as well. So if they're playing Kindles or accumulated knowledges, it's going to count both. Just remember that.
Yep, uncommons at number 2. I've got Pyroclasm. That's 1 and a red for the sorcery. Deal 2 damage to each creature. I think this token's menace is going to be pretty real, and Pyroclasm is one of the only ways to fight it, along with Death's Head Buzzard. That's 1 black for a 2/1 flyer that when it dies, all creatures get -1/-1 until end of turn. So I think Pyroclasm is going to do some serious work, and is going to be a very good card. We saw the average power and toughness was 2, similar to Rivals. This is close to Golden Demise, obviously not as good, but I think it's going to do some work.
Yeah, I agree. I gave Spikeshot Goblin my number 2, but this could be totally wrong. That's the 2 and a red for a 1/2, and you can pay a red and tap it, and it deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player, and there are a number of ways to augment its power. There's some equipment that can do it. Certainly combat tricks can do it, and also just being able to ping things is going to be relevant, but it also is probably just going to have a huge target on its back as a 3-mana 1/2 utility creature that dies to most removal in the set.
I don't think you're wrong. I was torn between that and Pyroclasm. I took a flyer on Pyroclasm.
Yeah. And number one, as a surprise to no one, we've got Lightning Bolt as the best uncommon in red.
Moving on to green, what do we got to talk about here?
I think only one card here that we really differed on, and that's going to be Fierce Empath. So this is two and a green for a 1-1. This is sort of like Imperial Recruiter. It's a variant on that. When Fierce Empath enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost 6 or greater. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you about this card. You give it a C-, I gave it a B-. So here's why I think this card's going to be good. We saw in Rivals of Ixalan how good the Forerunners are, like being able to search up your rare, specifically the Dinosaur Forerunner. There's a lot of good rare dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. This set is packed jam-full of powerful bomb rares, and I think the ability to go tutor up your individually powerful bomb rare is really strong and is worth getting pulled into a color for.
As you're talking about this, you know, the thing that I'm like looking at and realizing is that it's so good with morphs.
It is.
Like, you're just, even if you don't get a bomb, you can just go grab Woolly Loxodon, which is 5 green for a 6/7 morph. Like, so you just go get a big dumb thing and then you just cast it for 3 next turn. If that's your like worst case scenario, that's still probably pretty good.
And they're going to know the morph is coming because you have to reveal it, but
whatever.
Still.
Yeah, I think you're right. And this is also splashable.
Yeah, it's just a tutor effect in limited for what look to be powerful cards. And being able to go search up your powerful card is really strong.
Yeah, you're right. B-. Okay, I'm good. Moving on.
Yes.
Top commons in green. Number 3. I'm excited about this little difference here. So I gave my number 3 spot to Kavu Climber. This is 3 green for a 3/3. When it enters the battlefield, draw a card.
Yeah, that card's rock solid. I don't have any problem with that card. I think it's a little expensive and a little not good enough at attacking. It is a value, and there's ways to blink. We've seen all that stuff. I'm just not sure it does quite enough.
Yeah, that's fair. I think, what's your number 3?
My number 3 is Cultivate, 2 green for the sorcery. Search up 2 lands, put one of them onto the battlefield, tap one of them into your hand. I think this is going to be a really hotly contested card for some sort of a 5-color green-based deck that I think is going to be really strong in the format.
Yeah, yeah, maybe you're right. If that 5-color green deck does exist, certainly Cultivate is going to be number 3. I just think Kavu Climber is like really good value.
It's rock solid, yeah.
Rock solid 2-for-1.
No complaints against that card.
Number 2, I've got Arbor Elf. That's a 1 green for a 1/1, and you can tap it to untap target forest.
Yeah, combines well with Caustic Tar, which is 4 black for an enchantment. You can tap target land to have an opponent lose 3 life. So you can start draining for 6 a turn if you put that Caustic Tar on a forest with your Arbor Elf.
It also combines really well with Utopia Sprawl, the 1 green mana enchant forest, so that like then has that land tap for another land of your, or another color of your choosing. So then Arbor Elf suddenly is ramping you 2 lands when you untap your land that has Utopia Sprawl on it.
Oh yeah, we're getting into cube territory ramp there.
I know, that's I've been doing that in cube this week. I love it. What's number 1?
Number 1, we've both got Epic Confrontation. This is 1 green for the sorcery. Target creature you control gets +1/+2 until end of turn, and it fights target creature you don't control.
Yeah, that is good. 2 mana for a fight spell that augments power and toughness is strong. What about uncommons?
Uncommons, my number 2 slot, I've got Imawari of the Open Fist. This is 2 green for a 5/5 legendary creature with trample. When it enters the battlefield, each opponent may put a legendary creature card from his or her hand onto the battlefield.
Now you may be asking yourself, well, how many legendary creatures are there in the format? And we've done that work for you. There are none at common. There are only 6 at uncommon, and really only 3 of those are any good. So you don't really have to worry about this a lot. And how many are there at rare?
Yeah, there are 15 of those legendary creatures at rare, and those are good rares. Like you might be losing if your opponent puts one of those onto the battlefield, but I think the upside is real enough that until you know they've got them, you're supposed to play this card.
So would you, like, let's say you see a legendary creature, or God forbid you get punished, and they just put it into play when you cast this, are you then siding this out?
I think so.
Yeah, but until then, this card is just so good. Like, most of the time, you're not going to get punished, and you're going to be putting a gigantic threat on the board for pretty cheap.
Yeah, the fact that it's got trample is what pushes us over the top, I think. 5/5 trample for 4 is a big beater, and cannot be chumped.
Yeah. I put Rancor as my number 2, but I might actually now have Fierce Empath there. I'm not sure, but I think Rancor is going to do a lot of work. This is like sort of the exception to the, no, don't be just jamming enchantments everywhere. This is single green for an aura. Enchanted creature gets +2/+0 and has trample. And when Rancor is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you return it to its owner's hand. This just like turns any creature into a threat that can't be chumped. It's also really good with token strategies, which green does have. And if you're pairing green with another color that cares about token strategies, like talking about Hordling Outburst, dropping this on a one of the 1/1s, then that 1/1 dies, then you just re-rack it again for another 3/1 trampler. Like, that's going to be really, really strong, I think.
Yeah, Rancor's gross and limited. I almost put it as my number 2.
I have Iwamori of the Open Fist as my number 1, green uncommon.
And I've got Fierce Empath, the one that tutors a 6-drop, as my number 1 uncommon.
Awesome. All right, so we're not going to talk about our grades for the gold cards or the artifacts of the lands, but we did want to talk about some synergies.
Well, really, really quickly, I think the gold cards, I think it's worth noting that in previous sets, you know, Limited Resources always likes to talk about the fact that the gold cards are signposts for what the color pairs want to do. I don't think that's true here at all. They're great cards, and they sort of do things that, like, each color pair is known for, but they're not signposts towards decks, and I don't think you should take them as such. I think you should just look at them as face value, and they kind of do what they say on the card.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, probably Cloud Blazer might be an exception to that rule, the blue-white one, but for the most part, I think that's correct. All right, so we wanted to talk about some synergies that exist in the set. As we said before, like, we're not seeing that there's really, like, defined ideas about what archetypes are trying to do in this format, but there are a lot of really cool card combinations in the set that we wanted to talk about. And we sort of started hinting at one of these in our review of the colors, and that was the black-red sacrifice deck. So what does that look like?
There's kind of 6 cards here that you really want to be on the lookout for. The first of which is Act of Treason. That's 2 red for the sorcery, gain control of target creature until end of turn, untap it gains haste, and then give it back to your opponent at the beginning of the end step. That's how you're going to steal your opponent's creatures. And then the idea is that you take them and you sacrifice them to sacrifice effects on your side of the battlefield. So those sacrifice effects are Fallen Angel, the 3 black-black for the 3/3 flyer, sacrifice a creature to give it +2/+1 until end of turn, and Phyrexian Ghoul, the 2 and a black for the 2/2, and you can sacrifice a creature to give it +2/+2 until end of turn. And worth noting that, like, these kinds of synergies have existed before where the sacrifice outlets cost mana and have still been good. So I have a feeling it's going to be extra good with 2 premium sacrifice outlets that you don't have to pay mana for.
Yeah.
And there's another way to steal a creature that's a little bit clunkier. This is Enthralling Victor. 3 and a red for the 3/2 human warrior. When it enters the battlefield, gain control of target creature and opponent controls with power 2 or less until end of turn. Untap that creature. It gains haste until end of turn, so you can steal a creature power 2 or less and sacrifice it with the Enthralling Victor. And then there's a couple other, like, ways to take advantage of this sacrifice outlet stuff. Zulaport Cutthroat is sort of a utility creature. 1 and a black for the 1/1 human rogue ally. When Zulaport Cutthroat or another creature you control dies, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. So every time you sack a creature, you're draining your opponent, and that can add up in a hurry. You don't even necessarily need to be sacking their creatures. At a certain point in the game, you can just sacrifice your team and get them that way.
And then also, they stack themselves. Like, if you have 2 Zulaport Cutthroats in play and you sack a creature, you're draining for 2.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's not really a situation that seems too far-fetched with them being an uncommon.
Yeah, as we saw with Browbeat, you're going to get 3, 4, 5, 6 of all the uncommons.
He got me.
Okay, and the last card here, this is just like a minor bit of value. This is Humble Defector, 1 and a red for the 2/1 human rogue. You can tap to draw 2 cards, and target opponent gains control of Humble Defector. Activate this ability only during your turn. So the idea is that you tap your Humble Defector to draw 2 cards, and then you sacrifice it so that your opponent doesn't get to take control of it.
Yeah, that can also combo with the blink effects in the set as well. You can, like, go to tap Humble Defector and then Cloud Shift it and draw the cards, and then it returns to play under your control. I think there's that card is quite abusable in the set. But that Black Red Sacrifice deck looks fun. I'm really looking forward to drafting that deck.
This next thing looks super sweet to me, too, as soon as I realized you could do it. What's this?
Okay, so there are a few things that care about the ability of untapping creatures. So first and foremost is Horseshoe Crab, which is 2 and a blue for a 1/3, and it has the ability single blue, untap Horseshoe Crab. So you can do it as many times as you want for a single blue mana, or each iteration costs 1 blue mana. You understand what I mean. And that looks pretty bad at face value, as well as these other things, but we're going to see that there are some cards that combo with it that require you to tap. So the other 2 ways to untap creatures, we've got Nettle Sentinel. This is a single green for a 2/2 elf warrior. Nettle Sentinel doesn't untap during your untap step, but whenever you cast a green spell, you may untap it. So you have the ability there to maybe abuse it to untap it multiple times. And you have Free Speed from the Reel, which is an enchantment. It's a 2 and a blue for an aura, enchant creature, and you can pay a single blue to tap enchanted creature, or a single blue to untap enchanted creature. Now, why would you want to do that? Okay, well, I think the biggest reason to do that is there is a gold uncommon in blue-red called Quicksilver Dagger. So this is 1 blue-red for an aura. Enchanted creature gains tap, deal 1 damage to target player, draw a card.
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty gross if you think about that in combination with Horseshoe Crab. You just tap it, deal a damage, draw a card, pay a blue, untap it, deal a damage, draw a card. You don't need to do that many times. Like, even if you do that a few times, then your opponent untaps and they go kill it, you've gotten some gross value out of that. And if that goes unanswered for a turn, you're done. Your opponent has lost the game. Retraction Helix is a single blue for an instant. It says, until end of turn, target creature gains tap, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. So that basically turns your Horseshoe Crab into like unsummon or a boomerang effect for a single blue mana. So you just go bounce that thing for a blue, or bounce that thing, tap, bounce that thing, pay a blue, untap Horseshoe Crab, tap, bounce that thing, pay a blue, untap it. You get it. Pretty gross. There's Presence of Gond, which is 2 and a green for an aura that lets a creature tap to make a 1/1 token. Again, you get to just like poop those out for as many blue mana as you can pump into Horseshoe Crab. And Heavy Arbalest is an equipment for 3 mana. Equipped creature doesn't untap during its controller's untap step, but equipped creature has tap, deal 2 damage to target creature or player, and it has an equip cost of 4. So the downside is with Heavy Arbalest is that you have to pay 4 mana to keep re-equipping it everywhere. But now with Horseshoe Crab, you just pay a single blue mana, untap it, and then keep dealing 2 damage to probably your opponent because they'll be dead pretty fast. So I think Horseshoe Crab is a real synergy card in this format, and you're going to be looking to grab those in combination with some of these really cool tap engines that exist in the format.
Yeah, it was really sweet. I first saw Horseshoe Crab and I was like, what is this card here for? And then the first time I saw one of these untap cards, I think the first one I saw was Retraction Helix. And I was like, oh, yes, we're doing it now. And I was immediately looking for others. We're going to make an honorary achievement for the set of bouncing your opponent's board with Horseshoe Crab and Retraction Helix.
Oh, yeah. Well, but it's not the whole board because you can't hit lands.
Well, everything but lands. Yeah. Their side of the battlefield's going to be empty.
Build your own River's Rebuke.
All right, the next thing is sort of a deck and a lot of synergy, and we've been hinting at this throughout the episode as well. This is sort of a green-white go-wide deck, and I think red's going to be in there a little bit as well, depending on your build. So certainly tokens are concentrated in Naya, and actually maybe there's synergy with black, too, with Zulaport Cutthroat. I mean, they're going to have to block them.
Yeah, I think you could be going like black-green tokens or black-white tokens also.
Wow, this set's going to be so deep. I'm so excited to draft this set.
Me too, man.
So the first card here, there's several ways to pump tokens and generate tokens. This is Broodhatch Nantuko, 1 and a green for a 1/1 insect druid. When it's dealt damage, you create that many 1/1 green insect creature tokens, and it's also got morph for 2 and a green. So for that surprise value, you can play it face down as a morph and then morph it up when they attack into it, and boom, pow, you might make yourself 5 or 6 insect tokens because your opponent's not suspecting it. So that's a way to generate a lot of tokens there. Next on the list, Stampede Driver is single green for a 1/1 human spell shaper. 1 and a green, tap, discard a card. Creatures you control gain +1/+1 and gain trample until end of turn. And that doesn't necessarily even need to go in a token strategy. Just threat of activation on that is going to be pretty real in complicating combat for your opponent, I think.
Especially because there's a lot of big, dumb green creatures, period, that like really would love to have trample.
Yeah, for sure. Ambassador Oak is a way to generate multiple bodies. This is 3 and a green for a 3/3 tree folk. When it enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 green elf warrior creature token. So 2 bodies there for 4 mana. Echoing Courage, this is 1 and a green for an instant. This is a way to pump your tokens that have the same name. Target creature and all other creatures that share a name with it get +2/+2 until end of turn. So if you've got a bunch of elf tokens running around, if you've got a bunch of spirit tokens running around, you can pump all of those +2/+2 at the same time with your Echoing Courage. Presence of Gond, we just talked about this. This is 2 and a green for the enchant creature. An enchanted creature has tap. Create a 1/1 green elf warrior creature token. Even if you're not going off with an untap effect, just generating a 1/1 every turn and then alphaing in with some way to pump your tokens is a good way to win a game of Magic. Kong Ming Sleeping Dragon. This is 2 white-white for a legendary creature. It's a 2/2, and other creatures you control get +1/+1. And Valor in Akros. I think this is really going to be a true build around in the format. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. I think this is going to be a house in these tokens decks. And Squadron Hawk, a good way to generate multiple bodies. This is one and a white for the 1/1 flyer, and when it enters the battlefield, you can search up any other number of copies of Squadron Hawk, so sort of a Legion Conquistador that's a 1/1 flyer, and we all saw how powerful Legion Conquistador was in the last block. I think Squadron Hawk's going to be even better here, because first of all, I think it's a better card, and I think there's better ways to abuse it. And then the last one is the enchantment that I'm hyped on, and Ethan is not. Promise of Boonray. This is 2 and a white for the enchantment. Whenever a creature you control dies, sacrifice Promise of Boonray and generate 4/1 spirit tokens.
Yeah, so a lot of synergies of tokens in green and white. We talked about a few ways that red can maybe fit in there with Hordling Outburst, 1 red-red, create 3/1 goblin tokens at sorcery speed, Trumpet Blast, 2 in a red for the instant attacking creatures get +2/+0. Important safety tip, please cast Trumpet Blast in your combat step. We've made the mistakes for you. Don't follow in our footsteps.
I have punted games so hard that way, because you're like gonna win the game and you just want to do it pre-combat to be extra careful, to make sure you don't like miss it. And then it feels so bad when you mess it up.
Don't do it until the creatures are attacking. And Goblin War Drums, maybe in a pinch. This is 2 in a red for the enchantment that says creatures you control have menace. So that can really add up if you've got a bunch of tokens and God forbid they've been augmented in any way with an anthem effect of some sort. That's going to really put pressure on your opponent when you Alpha Strike. There is a minor synergy that we talked about earlier with life gain happening to your opponent. So when you grant life gain to your opponent, and this is really, I think there's only just one card in the set that cares about this, unless I missed one. It's Kavu Predator. So this is a 1 and a green for a 2/2 Kavu creature with trample. And it says, whenever an opponent gains life, put that many +1/+1 counters on Kavu Predator. Now, this, I think, really has like some cool synergies, because I don't think a lot of people are going to want to pick this card up. And if you can pair that with, I think that the biggest one is going to be Invigorate, which is an obnoxious combat trick that exists. So this is 2 and a green for an instant. Target creature gets +4/+4 until end of turn. But if you control a forest, which you probably do if you're in a green deck, rather than pay its mana cost, you can just have an opponent gain 3 life. So this in conjunction with Kavu Predator is going to give it +7/+7 until end of turn. 3 of that power and toughness being permanent. That's a pretty big game. We talked about 2 white removal spells earlier. Path of Peace, that's 3 and a white for the sorcery. Destroy target creature, its controller gains 4 life. And Swords to Plowshares, exile target creature, its controller gains life equal to its power. Both of those I think are quite good, just straight up. They're Ben's top uncommon and top common in white respectively. And they're going to gain your opponent life, and that's going to also pump the Kavu Predator. So I think this card's probably going to be a bit of a sleeper at the start of the format, if I'm right about its synergies with the cards we just mentioned. And if your opponent happens to be running a white, blue, or black deck, they might just have some incidental life gain there as well that is going to punish them with you having Kavu Predator in play.
Agreed. That card's sweet. I'm interested to try some of those combos out. We've also got another single card here that combos with a lot of other cards. This is Auromancer. 2 and a white for the 2/2. When Auromancer enters the battlefield, you can get an enchantment out of your graveyard and return it to your hand. So there's a number of enchantments that may or may not be falling off. Ordeal of Heliod, we took a look at that one earlier. That's the card from Theros that puts a +1/+1 counter on your creature each time it attacks. Once you get 3, you sack it, gain 10 life. So you could potentially rebuy Ordeal of Heliod and takes away some of the risk of throwing that on a creature and getting 2 for 1. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good enchantment based removal spells, Pacifism, and also Pillory of the Sleepless. This is 1 white-black for a pacifism effect that also deals 1 damage to your opponent on their turn. They're actively going to be trying to get that creature off the battlefield, and if they succeed, you can rebuy it with Auromancer and suit it back up on their creature. Curiosity. This is similar to, God, what's that card from Rivals? I'm blanking.
Curious Obsession.
There we go.
Name that card.
Crushed me. This is not as good. This is 1 and a blue, and it does not pump it. Just whenever the creature deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card. Quicksilver Dagger, we talked about. That's the ping effect and draw a card. There's just a lot of enchantments where you can get some value. Promise of Boonray, that's the one where you sack it and make 4 tokens. Rebuying that and getting another 4 tokens sounds pretty sweet. Vessel of Nascency is in this set.
Oh, I didn't think about, I was only thinking about it with auras. I didn't think about it with permanent enchantments.
Yeah. Vessel of Nascency, you can sacrifice, cost a single green mana. You can pay 1 and a green, sack it, and impulse for like a creature, a land, or an enchantment, I think.
It can get back Nyx Fleece Ram, the 1 and a white 0/5, because it's an enchantment creature.
That's such value. Because your Nyx Fleece Ram's going to be dying all the time.
Oh, yeah. They got to get that off the board. That's gaining you 1 life every turn. Oh, I can't wait to build a little Pillow Fort deck with Nyx Fleece Rams and Auromancers. That's great.
And there's another really interesting card that we didn't discuss, and I think we had pretty different grades on this one.
Did we?
Yeah, I think so. This is Deadly Designs. This is one and a black for an enchantment. You can pay two to put a plot counter on Deadly Designs. Any player may activate this ability. And when there are five or more plot counters on Deadly Designs, sacrifice it. If you do, destroy up to two target creatures. That's certainly a powerful effect, and rebuying that sounds awesome. So I think Deadly Designs is going to be as good as the format is slow and dirtily. I think the more time you have to put mana into this, the better it's going to be.
Yeah, that is a pretty real mana sink, and one worth sinking mana into if you can. But I don't know, it just seems pretty clunky. That's a lot of 12 mana to kill two creatures.
I agree, it's super clunky, but it's a ton of value if you have the mana to do it. And yeah, it's in installments, so it's not like... It's still really expensive, don't get me wrong. But I do think there's something to look out for there. So yeah, lots of cards to combine with Auramancer, and even cards that you can put in the graveyard yourself.
Yeah, for sure. And the last thing we want to talk about, we've alluded to this deck as well. This is sort of the blink synergies that exist. Cloud Shift, that's a single white mana to blink a creature. And White Mane Lion, that's the one and a white 2/2 with flash. When it comes into play, you return a creature you control to its owner's hand. These are enablers for some really great Enter the Battlefield triggers. So Cloud Shift can combine with a lot of Enter the Battlefield things. It can help to take your creature out from under a pacifism. But really cool is that it can unmorph a card for a single white mana.
That is insane.
Yeah, so you've got, like, you know, your really cool morph card there. Maybe it has an expensive ability to unmorph it. Doesn't matter. Single white mana. Boom. Flip it up. We alluded to Urbis Protector. That was your 6-drop that made a 4/4 angel when it came into play. We talked about that. Cloud Blazer. We talked about that as the white-blue uncommon. Comes into play, gain 2 life and draw 2 cards. Mana War, the 2/2 that comes into play and bounces a creature. Cortisar, this really slots in great to the blue-white theme as well, because it's a 2 and a blue for a 1/3. But if you didn't pay white mana when you cast it, you have to sacrifice it. And when it comes into play, you get to look at the top 3 cards of your library, pick one, put it into your hand, and put the other on the bottom of your library. So that's pretty gross to get to rebuy that multiple times.
I think this extends past even blue-white. I think there's a lot of synergies in black and maybe like some stuff in other colors as well. There's Ravenous Chupacabra that's great to blink, obviously.
Obviously.
2 black for the 2/2 destroy creature when it ETBs. Zombify is a way to re-trigger all these Enter the Battlefield effects if your creature has died.
Ooh.
That's 3 and a black, return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. There's also Supernatural Stamina. I think this is going to be an insanely good combat trick and really tough to play against if you've got creatures with good ETBs. Single black for an instant, target creature gets +2/+0. If it would die, it hits the graveyard and then returns to the battlefield on your side of the battlefield tapped. So you're going to get a re-trigger that Enter the Battlefield ability. Regrowth in green, and that's a favorite of yours in Cube. Mm-hmm. Your card dies, you buy it back, recast it, get another trigger. There's just a lot of synergy with all these good ETBs.
I'm super excited. I feel like we've just like scratched the surface of what this set has to offer. I bet there's a lot more really cool like 2-card synergies that we are not seeing that we're going to get to explore once the set goes live on Magic Online.
Yeah, and if you see ones we've missed, tweet at us. We want to know the secret tech.
Yeah, please let us know. Well, we promise to keep it secret, but we would love you to share it with us.
Yeah, nobody's on Twitter these days.
No, it's dying medium for sure. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Is this set live yet? Can we play it?
I am jonesing so hard to draft this set right now.
Me too.
It's going to be, I think there's going to be such freedom and flexibility to draft decks and to explore things. Like, I think it's going to be a huge breath of fresh air after getting led down some pretty clear paths in Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan.
I agree completely. Well, we'll get to check that out next week when we check in and see how we're feeling about the format. Maybe we'll have some better ideas about some archetypes or some color pairs we've been having success with or not having success with, and we'll report all that back to you here on the show.
Yeah, thank you as always to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give that a listen.
If you want to get in touch with us, we are on Twitch and Twitter all the time. I am at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. Please come hang out in our chats. We would love to see you lurking there or not. You can also tweet at us. I am at LordTupperware. Ben is at MrMetronome. Or you can tweet at the podcast at Lords of Limited.
Hit us up with those 2-card combos. Also, if you've got questions about the show or feedback, especially about this episode, stuff you'd like to see in future crash courses, other ways we could think about structuring us, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com. We welcome any and all feedback, constructive or otherwise.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.